What's happening? Welcome to season 3 of Apples and Snakes, the podcast. I'm your host, Yomi Shode, and we have a whole new set of poets and are still focusing on what it means to be Black, British, and a poet or spoken word artist. If you are interested in getting a greater insight into the journeys of some of your faves, then join us and keep listening. Saying that, if you do like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe wherever you would usually listen to your podcasts and rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Welcome to the Apples and Snakes podcast. My name is Yomi Shode, and yeah, we talk legends out in here. We're talking legends in these streets. But even in my introduction to this gentleman right here, interestingly enough, Breeze, yeah, before I get into it, how you doing, sir? What's going on?
I'm good.
I managed to catch a huge chunk of the BET Awards earlier this week, right?
BET Awards. Okay.
And Busta was given this mad prestigious, like he was recognized.
Yeah, that was nice.
And he'd done this phenomenal speech. I don't know if you've seen it, like he'd done this speech. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Busta Rhymes, by the way, for the folks who were thinking, huh, who, what, where? And his years in the game as a hip hop artist, as a visionary, I don't even know how to even describe Busta Rhymes. But there was one key, but there was a lot of things that he said, but there was something that he said when he was talking about like an older generation and younger generation.
Yeah.
And for the most part, how in order for the younger generation to keep pushing, they got to still see the older generation for the most part doing their thing. And I saw you on the stage at Apples and Snakes monumental evening at the Roundhouse, as well as the Roger Robinsons and the Cat Francois. And I was like, yo, just when I thought I got this unlocked to work, these folks are still making me work. And I'm like, this is what... And this is exactly what I think Busta was talking about, like, was that idea of how can I see where I'm going to be in X amount of, like, I don't know, months or years time if the prototype is not showing me the way? Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think there's something great in that. And I would like to know who that is for you at some point. But when I think about music, when I think about audience participation, when I think about just a blessed vibe, I think about the likes of yourself. And I just want to thank you first and foremost for still keeping that bar so high in relevance in terms of work and passion and that kind of transferable energy between the audience and the artist and the band, and everything just seems to work and you do this magically. And I'm excited to get into this. If you don't know, folks, I already said the name. If you don't know who I'm talking about, I'm talking about the one and only B to da, the R to da, E to the I to the S to da. You listen, come the on. Thing is, yeah, I've always wanted to say that for myself, you know. I'm like, I've seen you do that too many times. I'm like, I finally get an opportunity to do it on this platform. Breeze, is an absolute pleasure, man. How are you? How are you?
I'm good, and I'm blessed by your words.
It's important, man.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it was a blessing to see you at the Roundhouse the other week as well. Because I haven't seen you in a long time. I've just been seeing bits on social media, and it was good to see you in the flesh and see you do the thing. You know, like I told you, it was on that day I told you, it's great to see what you're doing. Like the way you're taking the art form, the business side of it, the art, and just running with it. You've built on top of what you came into it. you saw what was going on and you're like, all right, cool. This is me. And then you're built on top of that. And it's beautiful to see. It's inspiring for me to see that. Because that makes me in turn go, okay, man has to be this now. Okay, there's still levels to go. All right, cool. So that's a beautiful thing. So yeah, it was good to see the
other thing, man. There's a lot to chop and we don't have much time and I really want to get into it because there are areas in which I think as an art form, there could be some consideration in terms of artistry and art and what that means in terms of how one profiles themselves that I think you do and you do very well, but not everybody might be so willing to do. And I don't want, and I wondered if you might know why that is. But before any of that, for those who are not aware of who Breeze is, would you mind just explaining just a bit about you and the work you do?
Yeah, sure. So name is Breeze, B-R-E-I-S, a.k.a. Brother Reaching Each Inner Soul, Brilliant Rappers Educate Intelligent Students, and so on and so forth. Hip-hop MC, author, and hip-hop educator. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for probably about 20 years or so, and it's something that's taken me all around the world, something I'm really grateful for, something I'm passionate about. I was always passionate about music, and then I found my way into education. Mm. And ever since, I've been sort of juggling those two careers, so to speak, and finding the balance, sometimes leaning more towards the music side, sometimes leaning more into the education side of things. Mm. And I think I'm at a place now where I've kind of got the balance, but also recognize there's a lot more to do, and there's a lot more I want to do as well. So, yeah.
In relation to poetry.
Yes.
There's a lot of conversations that I've been having, and I'm like, the baseline of this, for me anyway, the baseline before it kind of kicked into the song, or the play or anything like that, my base was poetry and writing and working with poetics. When do you recall your entry point? Like, what was that entry point for you in relation to poetry, and why?
For me, it's really interesting because it's not clear exactly when that entry point was, because I initially started off drawing and then telling stories. So I would, and this is when I was little, I would draw a picture and then I would write a story based on the picture. So that was my entry point. That was when I realized I liked words and stories. And then in my teenage years, it was rapping, freestyling, and then songwriting.
A bit of a not so confusing question, because this is what I also went through. And it'll be good to know more about this. Everything I keep saying, I'm like, we're going to get to it. But this is a good way to kind of enter the kind of thought process of it, right? Because hip-hop, this is your go-to, like you said, hip-hop and hip-hop education. But then the link, when you're considering poetry, the part it plays in it it plays a big part in this. Right. Yeah. So the idea of what came first, the poem or the verse? Do you know what I mean? In terms of what was that like? Because I know I went through a process where on a Monday I'm writing poems, on a Wednesday I'm writing a song, and people were kind of like, are you a poet? Are you an MC? Are you this? Are you da 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 da? Pick a lane. And I was just like, all right then, before we get into the nitty gritty of how you've made sense of that, would you mind talking about when you started writing poems, right? Or when you started writing a piece of a verse, and what that was? Do you remember what did you write about?
Okay. So I remember being really young, drawing a picture and then writing a story based on the picture.
Mm.
So I remember that. And then I think that kind of developed into songwriting. And then the rap came. And I believe in the midst of all of that, poetry was always there.
Mm.
I feel like it was always just coming through via osmosis.
Yeah.
It was always there. And I remember reading certain authors and just loved how poetic they sounded.
Mm.
And then being Nigerian, there's a natural poetic tone to the way we speak, whether it's via proverbs or quotations, like, and do you know what I mean? There's just something poetic in how we express ourselves. And I think I took that and put that into my raps.
Yeah. And also just to add, being Nigerian, we just feel like we can just do everything. Like, it's just not easy. Astronaut, why not? Yeah, we can just do this thing now. Just this guy now. Just get in and just shoot up in this rocket. It is interesting that, like, I was going to say that I like the idea of how you are able to exist in these multiple worlds. Do you see what I mean? It's not like you don't prioritize poetry because you're still a wordsmith, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are this equal love for, like, hip hop and the idea of what hip hop can be. Like, I think about John ZD, for example, and the work he does in movement and dance, but it's still kind of like seeded in the elements of hip hop for the most part. And all of that still shows itself in physicality, right?
Yeah.
And that is very dope. I'm getting geeky now. Proud moments.
Mm.
In all of this journey so far, do any moments stand out for you? Like, as like a proper proud moment, a significant moment?
I think there are many proud moments over the years. One of them was being part of Urban Griots.
Mm.
Urban Griots was an open mic night that Fatima and Juliana started, and they brought me into that.
Mm.
And I became the host of that, A&R, if you will. I had to go and search for other artists. I invited the likes of Ty. There were these guys that I used to work with back in the day, and they were called Rhythmical Army. They would come down, Beyonder, so many people. And that night went on for like about 5 or 6 years, and it really just brought together the lyricists and the wordsmith.
Yeah.
London, and it just made us more of a family. We wanted to get rid of like the cliqueiness of the poetry scene, and I feel like we really did that. And we were just really open, really welcoming, and I think it was a real good training ground for a lot of poets, singers, and rappers.
We
really, all of us, I'm saying all of us that took part in that time, we really grew. We learned how to deal with audiences. We learned how to just improve our performance and our stage presence. So that's a proud moment for me, being part of that. Deciding to do music full time, that was a big deal. That was probably like the biggest risk at the time, and the biggest decision I made. So that was big. Becoming an author, writing my first book, and starting my company, Student of Life, as well, which was all about hip hop and education merged together, getting young people to get excited about learning and expressing themselves through rhyme. So those are some of my proud moments And being on stage in one of my first ever big festivals, which was in France, and I'm in front of like 10,000 people. It's the biggest audience I've ever performed to. And I remember performing and then flying back to London and going, nobody in London knows what I've just done.
Yeah, man.
There's no social media at this point, right? So I'm like, I'm not on MTV Base. I'm not in Hip Hop Connection magazine right now. Nobody knows what I've done, but I've done it. And I did it big. So I can actually exist outside of the limelight and do this as a career.
100%.
And that was a big eye-opening moment for me.
100%. When you, do you mind talking a bit about the book, please? Because I'm very, in, like, you know, sonically, you can hear music and you can vibe. And I think there's something, and I've, there's something in how people connect with music generally, but it's another thing how people connect with music through a workshop. Now, when you write a book, you write a book, it's almost like, how do you now lift some of this off the page in order to get your thoughts across, workshop it, to craft it? What was that like? What is the discipline of... I was in... the reason why I'm here is because I was sat in an audience with a conversation between Rhett 32 and John Agard and Fiona Lamptey. And Rhett was talking about how, you know, being a rap artist is part of that process. You know, you create, you go into the booth, you, because Rhett does not, you know, there's been these, this, this thing going around that Rhett doesn't write his lyrics down. It's like a whole situation. Yeah. And confirmation via a close friend that, yeah, he actually doesn't write down his lyrics. Like he just walks, he doesn't write his lyrics. He just walks up and down, go through it in his head, blah, 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 blah. And then he just does what he does. Cool. Mm-hmm. However, he then spoke about the process of writing a book and being like, when you now put your thought onto paper, it's a different skill set in a sense. It, when you're not writing like raps or what have you, when you're writing, when you're like writing, be it, maybe it's a poem or something like nonfiction to a certain degree, it's a different kind of discipline. Would you mind talking about the craft process between these different skill sets in which you're writing onto the page, please, and what that was like?
Well, my first book was a collection of my rap verses that existed already. And all I did was gather them together. I wrote a few new ones as well for the younger children. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to just give an insight into the story behind the verse or the story behind the song. So that was like the inspiration paragraph, if you will. And so I would talk about why I wrote this verse or when I recorded it, because I'm actually, a lot of the pieces were actually recorded. So I'm now taking the audio and now putting it into print and explaining what was going on behind the scenes. So when I was in the studio, why was I doing it? Who invited me to the studio? What was my favorite line? Blah, blah, blah. So that process was really easy. And I finished writing that in about 6 months, the whole thing. That was easy. My second book, called Diary of a Creative Mind, that was a whole... beast. So that was actually a diary. And the way I, part of the way I actually wrote the book was I would write a few entries here and there, but for the most part, I would go to my social media. I'll go to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Instagram stories. And actually, I was journaling that way. So the bulk of what I did was take from my social media and then just add the other bits that I'd done throughout the year.
Yeah.
So that whole process was something else. And the editing for that, that was severe. I think I had like 12 different drafts.
Was your editing different to how you would do with your, like, your rap verses anyway? Or did you have to, like, did you try to implement similar templates? Or was you just like, oh, actually, the same template I would use for, like, my verses, I actually can't use in relation to this right now, or not?
It was different, yeah. I had to, because I'm a serial editor, even with my rhymes anyway.
Yeah.
But with this, there were so many different things I was looking at. So I wanted to capture the moment. So I had to like relive moments.
Yeah.
That was one. And then the other thing I had to try and do was I had to make sure it was interesting. You know what I mean? I had to make sure it was a good read. So there were moments when I had to become even more vulnerable than I've ever been in my music and share even more than I ever would normally. So it was a very scary process. And then handing it over to someone to edit and proofread. Or actually, I had like two editors actually. And that was scary because I don't do that with my lyrics. Yeah. Like, I'm very precious and I'll just keep it to myself. And when it's done, you're going to hear it when it's done.
Mm.
Whereas this, it had to go through that process of another person's eyes going through it.
Oof.
And just tearing it up and being like, yeah, nice, but no. No, but yes. Or more of this. There's not enough of this. This is missing. And that was a little bit difficult at first, but I enjoyed the process because it made me see more of what there is when it comes to putting something together.
I think about sticking with Roundhouse, for example. I remember when I walked out and I just saw all this merch. I just saw all this beautiful Breeze merch. And I'm just like, hey, the hustler. This is the grind of life. This is what we're talking about. And is it not? Like, this is, and then it made me think about poetry generally and with poets, and especially poets who are doing this full time and freelance in this gig and whatever it is. Like, the poem is the poem, but outside of the gig that you do, that you're booked for, the business acumen and the business is still a big part of it. And
huge.
You're like, listen, yes, I'm going to do this gig, but I also have a t-shirt. I also have a hoodie. I also have this and this.
You have an empire.
I have
huge.
A whole...
an empire.
And this is the... And I wonder, do you know what it is? I actually wonder what your thoughts are as to whether this is from a hip-hop aesthetic or a poetry aesthetic. With that kind of hip hop mentality, it's almost, remember like with Nipsey, when Nipsey was like, yo, each of my CDs is going to be $100 straight.
$100
for $100 each. And people just felt like, you are out of your mind. Who is buying your mixtape? Not even album. Who is buying your mixtape for $100? Mm-hmm. And Jay-Z's like, I will. Give me X amount of those.
Yeah.
Wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, when we now are discussing the idea of, or when you are now in this position to be like, all right, cool, this is the work I do, but also this is me making a living. What does that sit with you? And also, do you see a future where you can probably see poets selling merch?
Well, I'm sure they do already, right?
I'm like, they do, but I don't know if I see many of them. I know I say it like, does it happen? But I feel like there are some who would just want to stick with sticking to their poems. Like, I have my, and the thing is, by proxy of what merch is, it could just be the book, whether it's a pamphlet or whether it's like a full collection. That is the equivalent of what their merch is. But when we're talking merch, we're saying, yo, is this a pencil case? Is it a t-shirt? Is it a hoodie? Is it all of these different things in which you are occupying? So what got you to that kind of entrepreneurial type of thinking, which is aside from the music and aside from everything else?
Well, the first moment when I realized all of this was during Urban Griots.
Yeah.
We would have American poets come and perform.
Yeah.
And everyone was mad for like the American accent.
Yeah,
back then.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh. You know, and their poetry, their style of poetry was just on another level to what we were doing. And or different, not on another level, but different. So it was exciting to us. And the one thing I noticed is that they finished doing their gig, they would have something to sell. A makeshift booklet, a published book, they would have something. And there was like probably one or two poets in the UK in the scene at the time that was doing anything like that. So I always bear that in mind. Have a product to sell as well. And then just through hip hop and the way some successful independent rappers moved, I realized, oh, this was the way.
This
was the way. And it became more important as the industry started to shift and change. So back in the days, you could have a mixtape and you could sell your CD after your gig. No one's buying CDs anymore. Or vinyl. Do you know what I mean? So it's streaming now. So music has sort of been descaled, but that's not even the right word I'm looking for. Basically, the industry has widened the gap between the artist music and the consumer.
Yeah.
So we know the consumer no longer needs to buy music from the artist. They can just stream music. And then we get crumbs from the streaming platforms.
Yeah.
So the way as an artist you make money now is actually by finding a way to connect something tangible to your work. And that could be a book, that could be a t-shirt, it could be a cap, it could be a toothbrush. Like whatever, like something tangible, because music isn't tangible, it makes it harder. So when you have something tangible connected to the music or to the artist, that's when the consumer can be like, ah, yes, boom, I'm buying into that. So I've had people who haven't heard my music, but they've seen my merch and they buy it. Then I've had people that love my music and then want something to go with it and then they buy it. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I've looked at the likes of Nipsey, Tech Nine
is another story entirely.
He bought a whole warehouse,
wild,
with just merch and what he was making.
Still independent,
still independent, and he was making more than a lot of signed rappers. So the, you know, these are the guys that I was looking at. There's a writer called Kevin, I think it's Kevin Kelly, and he had the theory of 1,000 true fans. And he said, if you have 1,000 true fans, and let's say on average they spend $100 in a year, you can make $100,000. Based off having 1,000 loyal fans. But a loyal fan is a fan that will spend about $100.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not everyone that says they're a fan that's a loyal fan.
Of the 1,000, each of them must, there's a willingness for each of them to spend $100.
And not in one go. It could be spread over the year. You know, oh, an album, $10. Why am I saying dollars? £10.
£10, yeah.
Later on, come to a gig, £20, buy a t-shirt, £20. Do you know what I mean? Like it all kind of adds up. And at the end of the year, they might have spent £100.
And in relation to poetry and the fandom, we see it in music acts all the time having fans, but do you What's your gauge on that? Whether you feel like the merch can be t-shirts, you feel like poets can have screaming fans as soon as they come out of places, or what is, how do you, I don't know if you've ever thought of any of these things, basically. I'm just like, just ask it.
I think it's a little bit different for poets.
Go on.
So from what I see, I feel like some poets are on a different level, you know.
The way your voice just like
it's they're on a slightly different level, on a different wavelength. Because what I see with poets, some poets, is it's not really, their thing isn't really the merch. Mm. It's more the arenas that they're going into.
Okay.
And the collaborations. So I'm seeing poets do different collaborations or performing in spaces that you'd never really expect, you know, a poet or a rapper would never be invited to. So I'm just seeing a different sort of way of operating. And it's not necessarily the merch game. It's more like, oh, I'm working with this institution that's very prestigious.
Yeah.
And from that, the cachet I get from that is enough for me to get invited to do this gig here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm seeing more of that, and less of the merch game, but more of the collaboration and more of the spaces that they're entering into.
I guess, and some of it is in the graft and the grind. I think there's something about, mm-hmm. and maybe it's the come up in which the writer enters into their landscape. I come from going into the cash and carry when I was younger with my mom and buying, like, I know, a bag of Kit Kat or whatever it is at like £3, and then going to school and selling each of them at like 80p or something like that, because some of them just want Kit Kat. So the natural kind of hustle mentality has been with me for a minute. So naturally, I'm just like, there's some things that will just come and just make sense to me. And I can't necessarily be like, it's the same for anyone else. Do you know what I mean? Everybody enters this differently. But as soon as I walked out, I just remember just seeing all of your stuff, and I was just like, this is music, but it's beyond music. This is livelihood. And we have to consider how all of that feeds into each other, especially within this realm. But I don't know whether if it's just this specific realm itself, or whether it can kind of permeate into other art forms as well, you know? Thinking about a younger Breeze, what advice would you have liked to have given to a younger Breeze at your position now?
I would definitely say you're doing something that isn't necessarily being done on a large scale. You're pioneering something here. Stick at it. Keep doing it relentlessly, continuously, and consistent, because you'll reap the benefits later on. That's probably one of the, because I spoke about that in my diary. I said, that's one of the regrets I have, that I didn't, when I started performing, my whole theme or my whole idea of being a great lyricist was just being the best in the UK. Just be the best. That's what I want people to say. Like, yeah, who are some of the top MCs? I wanted my name to be announced in that. And then as time went on, my outlook on what I was doing changed. And it wasn't just about being the best from the UK. It was making sure that I showcased my culture. So that's via my language and my musicality.
Yeah.
So I coined the term BAM. My music was BAM, British African music.
Mm.
So I would fuse hip hop with some Nigerian genres, musical genres. So it could be a bit of Afrobeat or a bit of juju music, fused in with the hip hop, and then also with the language as well. So when I started doing that, there was hardly anyone doing that.
Yeah.
in the UK or in London. And when I went to Nigeria, they were all, well, not all, but many were trying to be American at the time. But there were a few key groups that were kind of doing their own thing as well. And this is like the, I would say, the early days of music that wasn't Afrobeat, wasn't Afrobeats, but it was something in between that. Yeah. So there was a little bit of that going on at that time. And I think that for me, even though I was doing what I was doing and it was confusing some people at the time, I should have just stuck with it because I think it would have, people would have gone, oh, that's what you've been doing. Yeah. I get it now. I get it now. Because now when I go into schools and I see young children of different cultures singing different Burna Boy songs or, do you know what I mean, or WizKid songs, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really, really interesting. Yeah. Like things have really changed. You know, from a time when it wasn't cool, now it's the coolest thing on earth.
100%. Before I get into your poem, which I'll request a poem from you or a verse. How you've touched on it, but I wanted to explore culture with you super quick. Like the I remember. When you kicked in with your the one with the Jay-Z kind of PSA, I think it was that one when you kind of kicked in with the Yoruba out of nowhere. I lost my shit. I was just like, what? And it's to no end. Like whenever moments like that happen, whenever a representation of when I get that feeling, I'm just like, yo, what? And it's no different from when I heard like Ty, for example. Do you know what I mean? Like when I'm listening to when I first saw Darwood and he done this poetic piece, and I'm just getting these different cultural points and references. And you touched on culture just now, but would you mind just explaining a bit about culture for you and why that is so important?
I grew up in London, and then I went to Nigeria, and I lived in Nigeria for 6 years. Returned back to the UK as a teenager and found it very difficult fitting in. And one of the biggest things for me that had happened was when I was in Nigeria, I was always the London boy. I had the London accent. I used to be made fun of over there because I had an accent. And when I came back to the UK, I, unbeknownst to me, I now gained a Nigerian accent. So I was getting teased for now sounding like an African. So it was quite confusing for me. And I kind of just went deep into like reading and writing. Reading and writing. And one of the things I think I did on a subconscious level is tried my best to hide my culture, my Nigerianness. And as proud as I was, I was a very proud Nigerian boy, but that got eroded quickly over the years. And it wasn't until hip hop or rap kind of slapped me in the face and said, It's about where you're from, and it's about where you're at. And I reconnected with my culture. And that's when I decided I wasn't going to shy away from my cultural side, my Nigerianness. I was going to put that at the forefront of what I was doing. And when I started to do it and I started to see the response from other Nigerians or other African children or grown-ups, I was like, oh, you like this. You're really feeling seen right now. I get it. Because that's what we wanted. We wanted to feel seen. We didn't want to feel invisible. Mm. And so me doing what I was doing, how I was doing it, lyrically, language-wise, and with the music, I realized that there were people that were feeling seen as a result of what I was doing. And that just encouraged me to keep on doing that.
Would you mind sharing your piece with us, please?
This is called Only Human. I wasn't raised with a silver spoon. It was more like a wooden one. Nuff beatings on my bum considered really troublesome. But I was just a bubblegum, young, glum, troubled one, trying to be a child in the hood of adulthood. I'd study for days to get A's, be pleased to see B's, found music, found Nuff CDs. If these teachers can't teach, I can't learn. In turn, I burn the midnight oil and I let the candle burn. But now the roof, the roof, the roof is on fire. Stepdaddy's gonna kill me like a hitman for hire. Picture mummy screaming 10 seconds after dreaming. The flames on my hair leaving smoke on the ceiling. Rescue my sisters, quench the fire, face the music. When nothing I do is good enough, I fine tune it before I lose it. Like my balance when I'm skiing. You're seeing super MCing from a special human being. It's hard being a human. I'm only human in a cruel man's television show. I'm a Truman. Cool in the gang when I hang up my hang-ups. It's breeze on the banger, hang my anger on the hanger. They can't see the venom in him, but they know it's penicillin. Lyrically healing the world more than penicillin. But when dealing with the mind from where I'm from, it's like a bygone time bomb in Saigon. Ladies want Mr. Right. I'm on the left field. I'm not perfect, but I'm worth it. It's how I heard it. And if I have to tell you that I'm a heck of a guy, you must be blind in your ear and deaf in your eye. You see, I did what I didn't want to do when I did it. Didn't do what I should have when I could have, I admit it. But God gave me grace, put a smile on my face. Humans are fragile in this human race.
Mm. Thank you very much. Breeze, what keeps you going?
Ha! I have a passion for what I'm doing.
Mm.
That's number one. And I believe that I have a purpose to do what I'm doing. I'm very fulfilled by what I do. And I think working with young people has really kept me grounded. Like there's a hunger for the work I do. And it's needed because there's so much out there that is very, very influential, very addictive, that is being consumed by young people. And so I feel I have to be louder. I have to keep going and doing what I'm doing as much as possible. Whether that's the education work I'm doing or even the music, just putting out more music. And I know I'm working on my album at the moment and I'm looking forward to that being out there in the ether because I feel like it's needed. So there's still so much work to do and that keeps me going. That knowledge keeps me going.
What are you currently reading and listening to right now?
Currently reading a book on marketing.
Oh, yeah.
Because I am trying to get better at marketing my business and my music. And what was the other question?
What are you listening to right now?
What am I listening to? It's going to sound weird, but I'm listening to myself.
New work or just like old work or what is it?
No, the new stuff. Amazing. So, I'm just listening to recordings, to demos, critiquing myself, figuring out how do I improve this, listening to the music, you know, seeing what needs to change, what needs to be added. So yeah, it's a whole process. So that's mainly what I'm listening to. And then maybe a bit of Lil Sims. So.
In closing, I wanted to just explore education. You spoke about it so much. I think there's something in the work you do, especially in relation to hip hop as well, which, you know, carries its own connotations. And hip hop and its many extensions and branches of hip hop, whether it's drill, grime, all of these different things, and also that carries its own stigma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially when it pertains to blackness, right?
Yeah.
All of these things play such a visceral and strong part in the influence. And when you go into schools, when you're working with students, are these things in the back of your mind in terms of just like people wanting you to perform or to do this hip hop thing or what have you? Like, how do you push against some of that, and how do you keep the education at the forefront of this? Like, there's so many things you're working against, and it's almost like you carry this responsibility of how just how you illustrate this art form. What's that been like?
It's changed over the years.
Mm.
So initially, I think in the early years, a lot of schools or a lot of teachers were a bit apprehensive about a rapper coming to the school and performing in front of the children.
Mm.
And then also the children had their own expectations of what a rapper was. So
imagine, that's so mad. It's so true.
I feel like I came in just mashing up everybody's preconceived notion of what a rapper is.
Young and old.
Young and old. And it was continuous. And then there was a time when I had to prove myself. I felt like I had to prove myself to these young teenagers who were also rapping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, what you got?
Mm-hmm.
What you got? That kind of energy. And then me being from a different era and maybe genre to a degree, it was different for them, but they respected it.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay. And so for me, it's just been a case of just be who you are.
Mm.
I don't need to try and be anyone for them, because I know that, they like this particular character or this particular rapper, so I should try and rhyme like that or use this kind of music. No, be yourself.
Mm.
And let them know that there's more than one way of doing this.
Mm.
Or there are different sounds, or there's something that, even though you might think you know it all or you've heard it all, you haven't. There's a lot more else that's out there. Because they're being programmed with, you know, certain sounds, themes, energy, and that's the diet that they have. That's all they have access to sometimes.
Mm.
So I'm very aware that I might not be their cup of tea, or they might not be able to connect with my style of music the same way they connect with whatever they're listening to.
Yeah.
But it's important.
Man, listen, it goes without saying, you mentioned earlier that it's been a long time you see me on a stage like Greed's days. And I just say the same to you, like it's been so long since I've seen you, but in hearing you before I even entered the building, it just warmed my heart, man. And it's such a pleasure to just have this conversation, this enlightening conversation that I've been wanting to kind of catch up with for a long time. Thank you so, so much. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
And I look forward to this new stuff that you just is bubbling, because it's the second or third time we're talking about this now. Mm-hmm. And I know, I'm readying the body and the soul, as I'm sure many fans and people are also readying to get to prep up for that as well. Thank you so much, man. See you on the other side.
Appreciate it. Yes. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Apples and Snakes, the podcast. I've been your host, Yomi Shode, and I hope you have enjoyed today's deep dive into the lives of Black British poets and creatives. Thank you to our audio producer, Drew Hawley,
at The Lab Studios. If you want to find out more about Apples and Snakes, head over to applesandsnakes.org and follow at Apples and Snakes on all social media channels. And remember, if you like what you are hearing, please, please subscribe wherever you would usually listen to your podcast and rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts.